Hello, folks. Welcome to the Solar Fit Renewable Energy Show. Bill Gallagher again with you, broadcasting from our studio in beautiful Daytona Beach, Florida. Always start with the weather report. Absolutely beautiful. It's so great to have fall finally arrive here in Florida. You know, it's much different than up north or out west. It's pretty kind of warm in the summer, but right now it's getting very, very, very nice. Anyway, I want to give a shout-out to our friends at Daytona Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram and Daniel Dye on a Race to Stop Suicide, number 21 GMS SolarFit-sponsored Chevrolet. Boy, there's a lot of words right there. We just came back from Phoenix, Arizona, and Daniel did a whale of a job. He qualified fifth, was running third. When he was bumped into the wall a little bit and it did some damage to the car, so they brought it in for a couple times. He started way, way, way in the back when the green flag was flown again, and he went from 32nd position all the way to 12th position, which was just so much fun to watch, and everyone on their feet cheering him on. So it was really good race. And boy, if you haven't been to Phoenix, you need to take a trip out there. What beautiful country. Well, this today we have a very special guest. We have Regina Lopez White Skunk, who is a board member with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance and a member of the Ute Mountain Tribe of Towak. Regina, thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, okay, so we always start out with a little bit of background. First of all, where are you located? Where are you living now?
I currently live in Towak, which is in southwestern Colorado on the Ute Mountain Ute Reservation.
Gosh, now that, is that like by the Four Corners? Tell us a little bit about where that is located.
Yes, it's in the Four Corners area, which very close to Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona.
Got to be beautiful out there right now.
Oh, it is. It's fall. We just had the leaves change, and now they're starting to actually fall.
Well, describe a little bit about where you are. Is it relatively flat? Is it mountainous? What's it like out there?
Well, it's kind of a little bit of everything. We, when you drive a few minutes south or west, you'll be in the deserty area. Then we can have some, you know, high desert plains. And if you drive a little north, you can be in the mountains and be driving along the side of the river.
Oh, man, it sounds beautiful. Well, tell us about your background. You sound like a young lady. Where did you grow up? Did you grow up in that area?
I was born and raised in this area here. I spent the majority of my life here, with the exception of a few years in Montana. I currently work with a group named Montezuma Land Conservancy here in Cortez. And I formally sat one term as an elected official for the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe, served 3 years, which at that time I was able to become one of the co-chairs of the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition, which was made up of 5 sovereign nations, the Ute Mountain Ute, the Hopi, the Pueblo of Zuni, the Diné or Navajo Nation, and the Ute Indian Tribe of Utah. And that was a group that was instrumental in the designation with the original Obama administration. That designation occurred in 2016.
Well, so you were on the board there, you say?
I was on the coalition. I was one of the co-chairs and the only female that served that group.
Wow, well, congratulations. That had to be pretty educational and fun.
Oh, absolutely. I had a variety of different and new experiences.
Well, what were some of the initiatives that you were working on?
Well, the Bears Ears, actually, we were 5 tribes that came together to lobby the administration of President Obama to protect 1.35 million acres in southeastern Utah. That in basic place is basically in the furthest southeastern corner of Utah, and much of that is also going to be within the footprint of the American Red Rock Wilderness Act area as well to try to move it along to a more permanent protection in that area so that another administration wouldn't have the capacity to change that. And this landscape, basically, the year following President Obama, President Trump redacted 85% of the boundaries. And President Biden, a few weeks ago, redesignated 1.36 million acres, so just a little bit more, same boundaries, and so we're back to being protected out here, and now we're trying to seek additional protection that may become unable to be reversed.
Okay, I get you. When I think of Red Rock, I guess I think of Nevada outside of Las Vegas. Is that part of the Red Rock area?
It is. So, I can just see where you're visualizing. So, from Nevada to Utah, you're able to just kind of stay within those red rocks and experience that landscape.
It is absolutely beautiful. There's really nothing like it. I had a chance to visit there a couple times, and man, you just never can get too much of it. And hiking there is just phenomenal. So. Yeah. So, what about the trees out there? What kind of trees are out there by large majority?
The large majority of the trees that are out there are like the juniper, the cedar trees. But like I said, you know, you could drive a few minutes one direction and could be in the mountains, and then you could be standing in a grove of aspen trees or pine trees. So, you know, I think that's the beauty is the diversity of the landscape out here, which provides a lot of different experiences just depending on what you're out to experience. So, I mean, a lot of the indigenous people are tied to the same location. We may be out picking sage or harvesting pinyons or hunting. Whereas, you know, largely the recreational outdoor experience is very much present. So, I mean, it just depends on where you're going and what you're going to do.
Talk a little bit about the wildlife out there. When you say you're hunting, is it deer, bison? What principally would you hunt out there?
Deer and elk. Not necessarily that big game, but they have been known to be pretty good size out west here, especially near and in and around the landscape. Now, mind you, this is areas that are also largely a part of the Colorado Plateau area. So, you know, what you experience in Utah when you take away all the boundary lines, state lines and whatnot, you're still in the region. You're still experiencing those landscapes. But you may be in Colorado or you may be in northern Arizona.
I've always been fascinated with the names, where they come up with the names, like Bear's Ear and your name. How does that – tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when you think about the landscape, you know, a long time ago my grandmother used to share stories with us, and one of the things she often told us was that at some point in our existence, the animals and the humans could speak the same language and communicate. And so, you know, when we were out in the land, a lot of times they would have come across one another, and the animals would share things with the people. They would share a dance. They would share a song. Whatever that was, that even today, a lot of the indigenous people take from what was shared at one point, and it is a part of our culture, our customs, and our ceremonies. So when you look at certain areas and landscapes, it may maybe resemble, just as the buttes in the area resemble the bear's ears and the top, the cap of the bear's head, maybe kind of, you know, when they play peekaboo and it kind of pop up and you still see the ears. That's what that looks like out in the grove near where the two buttes are located. So, you know, when my people, we strongly believe in the bear, and that the bear did provide a very beautiful dance and a season in the spring when things are awakening. You know, he shared songs, he shared a dance, and he shared the knowledge that would be tied to that. And that's something even to this day that we continue to practice. So in the springtime, we do what's called the bear dance.
Boy, that is pretty, that is really got to be cool. Now, are there any videos of that, or is that kind of a private ceremony?
Well, you can see some videos if you go out on the internet and look up bear dance or the Ute bear dance. There's some examples out there that people can see that.
Now, are you in there at one of those videos?
I am.
Oh my goodness!
There is one video that is out there that has me that I was able to participate in putting together. So, and I think you can get to that one on YouTube.
Yeah, what's that? This called the Bear's Ears Dance?
No, the Bear Dance, the Ute Bear Dance.
Okay. Well, how are we going to know it's you? We're gonna put this on our Facebook to be on Saturday, and we want to make sure that they go to the right thing and they know it's you. How will they know it's you?
They will see a very young Regina. you'll actually. We'll see. If you punch in on YouTube, Ute Bear Dance and my name, but I think it would be, Regina. You can probably pull that up and be able to see that. But I can actually ensure that you get that correctly and send you a link if you don't mind.
That would be great, because I always like to see who I'm talking to. It's fun doing the interviews over the phone, but it's really cool to do it in person too. So linking our guest with a picture or a video would be really cool. Thank you. Look forward to that.
Awesome.
Okay.
No problem.
So it sounds like there's a Bear's Ear National Monument. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so that was a little bit of what I spoke of about the 1.35 that President Obama designated. The five tribes came together in a sense of healing and wanting to find a great solution to seeing this landscape that we're also tied to. And speaking to that particularly, you know, the Hopi, the Pueblo of Zuni are of the ancestral Pueblo, and so it's very, very important to them. But the landscape and the uses of the land to the Navajo or the Diné, the Ute Mountain, and the Ute Indian Tribe of Utah are largely kind of those that visited and helped to watch over this this place through time. And prior to colonialization, we basically just kind of moved in seasons and according to what resources were available in those areas. And so as time progressed forward and we had European encounter first with the Spaniards and then with others following that, that's where these places began to really experience some unsavory threats and vandalism and grave robbing. All those things really took place once they were identified by people that were curious and thought they needed to be preserved, and their form of preservation was taking the items away from the locations, which proved to also cause many, many issues. One being that, if we can't identify how and where the items or individual were laying or were found out there, then you kind of miss trying to tell the story as accurate as possible. But even today, we still find that some of that still occurs and is happening. And then the other one is the extractive industry. These areas are constantly under threat for people wanting to develop the area by, you know, digging and mining for oil and gas and other minerals. So, you know, there's a variety of different threats to this area, which is one of the reasons the five tribes sought some protection and really utilized their sovereign voices to pursue that journey for this landscape.
Wow, that is really interesting. Folks, we're going to have to take a short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Regina. We'll talk some more about what she's doing out there to help protect our nation. Talk to you soon.
Hi, folks. Bill Gallagher with SolarFit here. I'll bet there's something new that you didn't know. You can combine your new roof with solar power. How cool is that? So if you're getting ready to buy a new roof, check out the Solar Plus Roof Program by SolarFit. And here's a bonus. You could get a 26% federal tax credit and may lower your electric bill to $8 a month. Whoa! SolarFit, the local company that people have trusted for over 46 years.
SolarFit your life and set yourself free with the sun's free energy.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Solar Fit Renewable Energy Show. Bill Gallagher with Regina Lopez-White Skunk, member of the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance and a member of the Ute Mountain Tribe of Towak. Regina, before the break, you really, really had some interesting items that you shared with us. Got to go back just a little bit to talk about the different tribes. It really, really interests me. So we have five different tribes. I know the Hopi, the Pueblo, the Navajo, what were the two of them that I'm missing? The Ute?
The Pueblo of Zuni, the Diné, the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe, and the Ute Indian Tribe of Utah.
Okay. So talk a little bit about each of them, briefly, if you will. Now, you're with the Ute, understand that. How many people are there in the tribe, in your particular tribe?
My particular tribe, I'm a member of the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe, and there is around 2,200 people on the rolls, but within our community, there may be other tribes or other ethnicities that are here by marriage or something similar.
Okay, so would the Ute tribe typically? I don't know how. I'm trying to picture how far you are from the next tribe. Is it that a close proximity, or is there quite a distance?
No, there is another tribe in the state of Colorado, the Southern Ute Tribe, which is just directly east of us, and they touch our boundaries. And then to the south and to the west of us is the Diné or the Navajo Nation, which also touch our boundaries. So we're very closely located to those two tribes, but the other tribe, like Pueblo Zuni, is about 100 miles south of here, so it's a little bit of a distance, and the Ute Indian tribe is kind of north, in the northeastern portion of Utah, and so that's about maybe a few hundred miles in that direction.
Wow. Well, do you have different habits? In other words, if you're one tribe or another tribe, do you have different, tell us a little bit about the habits or how they differ?
Oh, yes. We were each very unique, and I say this even with the other Ute tribe. It just kind of depends on where you're geographically located as to what you may do and what you may hunt, activities that you do in those areas, really, and the landscape is really diverse in each of those areas. So in terms of habits and uniqueness, yes, it's largely based on what available resources are out on the landscape.
So when I think of some of the tribes, as I was growing up and seeing some of the residences, if you will, where they lived, it was quite different from where I grew up. Are there different types of homes that people live in out there?
Today, no, not really. We all live in the same kind of housing structure that many of you all live in. But in the past, some of us lived in teepees. Some of us lived in brushlight structures, just depending on time. Others had pueblo-like structures, which are what you see on the landscape that are within this protected area. And then, like the Diné or the Navajo, they live in kind of a mud and a wood structure, which is called a hogan. So yeah, there's a diverse historical types of houses.
So do you find that there's a lot of tourists that go out there with an interest in the different tribes?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, when COVID kind of tipped off and everybody had to isolate and, just kind of be real careful and stay away from people, yeah, our whole country really experienced a time that we would have never dreamed of. But when once COVID started to lighten up on the restrictions and whatnot, we definitely seen an influx of visitation out here, and tourism is important, especially to this region of the country. So it was really something that was good, but it also provided some threats and people just flooding a lot of the campsite areas, not visiting with respect in terms of campsite, and as well as some of the sacred sites, the Puebloan structures, even out on the trails, people just not really taking notice to how they would come and arrive and when they would leave. So, you know, there were things that are very, very important to us and our story and our history. You know, a lot of that is all written on the walls in the canyons. You know, the petroglyphs and the rock art, they all tell stories and have information. And when those are destroyed or vandalized, you know, that's like ripping a page out of our history books, and it will never be able to be recovered. Once those are gone, those are gone. It's not like a book where it can be reprinted. So, you know, those are things that our people have big concerns about this area. But we also want to ensure that these places, they're here for us. They're here for the public. These are all public lands that we're talking about. And we would like to be able to ensure that they'll be here for many generations for the indigenous communities as well as all those that are not. You know, what we experience today, we hope that our next generations and maybe several generations into the future will have an opportunity to experience. Yeah, and to do that, we have to work hard and we have to work together.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Do they have, and I know what you're saying, that, do they have any type of policing around these exhibits, if you will? They're not really exhibits, but they are in a way, to protect them from any type of vandalism?
No, there are some type of law enforcement on the ground, because BLM is the land manager, and in certain forest areas, you know, the United States Forestry Forest agencies, they all are out there. But that's always something. We're in a very wide open rural area. You know, we just don't always have that manpower and resource to be able to have that sort of security in and around these areas. And so this is one of the reasons that a lot of the organizations utilize a program that has been put together, which is Visit with Respect. And it basically helps to educate visitors on how to approach these sites and not to pick up and take things, and, you know, just basic visiting. Like, how would you go to your grandma's house? Would you, you know, dig? Would you take? Would you destroy things? I don't think so. Oh. I think that's kind of along the lines that we're hoping to help educate people and arm them with knowledge.
How about, this is a question of interest to me, when the kids grow up, are they likely to stay there or move away? What's their... how many people actually decide, this is it, I'm not moving, this is my location?
Actually, the large part of us, we don't leave. Right now, the Navajo Nation has the largest landmass or reservation, and the Ute Mountain have not as big, but adjacent to it. So, and the majority of our people, when you know we've been raised on the reservation and our area of the United States here, we're not so likely to leave. Some of us who have left, we find our way back home.
Yeah, I think that's true in a lot of cases where the youngsters think, hey, there's a greener grass, and once they get out there, he goes, nope, the grass is green where I was, and they come right back.
But well, that was me. I experienced that same sentiment. I couldn't wait to get out of here after, you know, I turned 18, finished high school, and thought the world was mine, and it was. And eventually I found myself coming back to this area, and, you know, something to my surprise, to be raising the voice and trying to elevate the issues around the land.
Well, and I'm sure they're very happy that you decided to come back. How long were you gone?
I was gone for like about 15 years, and then I returned.
Wow. What part of the country did you go to when you left?
To the north. I was in Montana.
Oh, boy. Montana's a beautiful state, too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
A little chilly sometimes.
Yeah. that helped to make my decision to return home.
Yeah, that's one thing I found about the Phoenix area was, man, it's so much different than, well, the northern area, certainly the southern area, as far as the climate and the lack of humidity. Boy, you can feel it immediately. It's just very, very pleasant there.
Nice. I attended just a short time. I attended some school down there, so I got to experience maybe not quite a year, but a few months. But, yeah, that was interesting and different from what I was accustomed to.
In Florida, you mean?
No. Well, I've been to Florida, but in Arizona.
Oh, in Arizona, yeah. Well, it is different here. I mean, I grew up in the Adirondack Mountains of upstate New York, so I love the mountain area. But I've been down here so long, I'm used to it. It's pretty nice to live by the ocean, too. So we've got such a wonderful country, Regina. We're so blessed to have something in just every part of the country that's beautiful.
Absolutely, which is a very great point to make. You know, it doesn't matter what part of the country you're in. You know, it's every much worth the fight to try to preserve what we have in terms of wild open spaces.
For sure. What can we do to help you? How can folks out there kind of get more information about what you're doing?
Well, you can go to the website, to a couple of websites, to Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance's website, and see what some of the work that we've been doing and some of the campaigns that we're working on. In particular, right now, we're assisting in gaining and garnering support for the American Red Rock Wilderness Act, and that is something that will hopefully provide a more permanent protection for some of the undeveloped landscape within the Bears Ears National Monument, as well as outer line places within the state that are open, and that's something that we've been working on. But you can also go to and learn more about Bears Ears National Monument and the journey and much of the information and how we all came together and moved forward on that. At the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition website, so you can read tons of stuff there and watch some videos.
Wow.
Basically, arm yourself with education, learn, read, and you know, if it's that important and you would like to share with your elected officials, by all means, share your stories with your elected officials and let them know how important this landscape is, not only to the indigenous people, but to all American citizens.
Great job, Regina. Great job. We're visiting with Regina Lopez White Skunk, and we're almost out of time. Regina, thank you so much for joining us today, and continued success. Please look at our Solar Fit Facebook on Saturday, and we'll see Regina dancing out there. Thank you, Regina.
Have a good one.
Okay, you too. Folks, got to sign off for now. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
SolarFit Renewable Energy Radio Show, paid for by SolarFit.